The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Say thank you, Mr. Chairman, my good friend Leiti Siegel, Feina Rabonim, the Rebbetzins, my Rebbetzin, esteemed friends, ladies and gentlemen. Firstly, I want to thank Nati for the very, very generous introduction. But when he said it was a single effort, that's not quite true. It was a collective effort. We had a lot of good helpers, and especially it wasn't myself, but it was together with my Rebbetzin. But thank you anyhow for the generosity. And it's always a pleasure to be able to address the people of this community. It just comes to mind that this past week we were at a dinner. Actually, the director of the dinner is here, Mr. Isaac Resnick, in memory of the late Rabbi Eloy, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And I once told him that here in South Africa is Fina Balabatim, good Balabatim. And he turned around to me and he said, Fina Balabatim. He says, the best of Balabatim in the Welt. Good Balabatim. He says, the best in the world. This is what Rabbi Eloy said. So, we had a lot of good helpers. This evening, the topic, just how important is Shalom Bayis, a Torah perspective. Before speaking about Shalom Bayis, Shalom which is particular to one's household, we must speak about Shalom in general. Peace and harmony. This is something which relates to a person in his home, his family, friends, the workplace, in his kehillah, his city, in all of Israel, in all of the world. Actually, this relates to all of human relations. And the sages have praised the Milas HaSholom more than they have praised any other quality. They have stated, it's Ola Al Kulono. It is the greatest of all attributes. Ein chayspin ela bebirchas hasholom. Where we always conclude with a special blessing for peace. In the tefillahs in the Shemein Esrei, we conclude the amavoreches ama Yisrael b'shalom. In the Kaddish, we conclude also shalom b'mreimov. In the birchas kahanim, yoseim lechos shalom. In the korbanos, the sacrifices which are written in the Torah, the final sacrifice mentioned in a number of places is the korban shlomim, the peace offering. And the sages say this is to show that he ela al kulono. This is the greatest of all attributes. V'hakeli shemachzik es kol habroches, and it's the utensil which holds all of the broches, and it's shokrul keneged kulon. It's equal to all of the other brachos. And if you have peace, then you have everything. If you do not have peace, you have nothing. And the greatest promise that we are given, L'osi Lovei, when the Melech HaMashiach will come, is he will come to make peace in the entire world. The Gemara says, actually, what is the purpose of Eliyahu? Lobo Eliyahu elalase shalom ba'aylam. He is to come to help make peace in the world. And the sages say in the Medrash in Parshas Nosei something very, very strange. Reb Lezer ben Eshel, Reb Lezer HaKofa Eimer. Reb Lezer said, Afilu Yisrael evdin aveira zora. Even when Israel serves idolatry, heaven forbid. But Shalom b'neihem, if there's peace amongst them, kaviyochel in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kaviyochel ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu ein sotan negeh b'neihem. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, says to the sotan, we cannot do anything about it. as it states, Chabor Atzomim, Atzabim, Ephraim, Hanechloi. Since there's unity amongst them, leave them. Avol Mishanechleku, but once there is division, then it states, Cholak Libom, Ato Yeshomu. Now I can punish them. From here, the sages say, we see how great peace is, and how hated is Machlekes, is division and conflict. There's a Gemara that tells us that those who pursue peace, and they make it their business to do so, they bond themselves to the world to come. The Gemara Masechet Tainus, Chov Beis Omer Aleph, Rabruka Chazoi Havashchiach B'Shuka Debei Levet. There was this Rabruka who was in the marketplace of a certain city, and Havashchiach Eliyahu Gabei. Eliyahu used to come to speak to him. He was an exceedingly great person. Omalei, he asked him, Ibai Shukab Bar Almadosi, is there perhaps someone in this marketplace that will go to the world to come? So he said no. Then, as they were speaking, two brothers came along, and Eliyahu said, Hanoch b'nei Almadosi. Those two, they will have a portion in the world to come. So he went to the two brothers, and he asked them, what do you do? And they said, Anshe b'dichyani anan. We are jesters. Rebatchinan atzive. When we see someone who is very, very sad, we go and we lift up their spirits with all types of humor and jokes. Or if we see two people fighting, we go and we make peace with our sense of humor and our jokes. Ahanoch b'nei alma d'osi. Those two will have a place in the world to come. And we learn, Elu dvorim shodem eichel peresen ve'elam azeh, v'keren kayemes ve'elam habo. These are the mitzvahs which one eats from the fruits in this world. And nevertheless, his reward is set aside for him in the next world. Havo shalom ben odem lechaveirei. That if you bring peace between man and his fellow man. And to the contrary, we see that those who pursue division, quarrels, they inherit Gehenna. This is what happened with Kerach Va'adosai. And there the sages say that the Torah tells us even the little babies that were still suckling from their mothers went down into the earth. And from here we see how hated is quarrels and division, because the courts of heaven never punish anyone under 20 years old. And on the second day of creation, the word Tov was not said, because on that day, division was made in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to divide between the upper waters and the lower waters. So from here we see the great praises that the sages have for this attribute of peace. And on the other hand, how they looked at conflict, quarrels, disunity, and so forth. But with all of this said, we find that peace is very elusive. From the day that the world was created, the Cain killed Hevel. The very first day the world was created, a war broke out between the two sons of Adam and Chava, and one killed the other. And ever since that day, there has been unending, continuing wars. The nations of the world They are preoccupied by war. And don't let anyone tell you differently. It's not wars of this decade. It's not wars of the last decade. It's not wars of the century. But there have been unending wars since the creation of the world. The fact is, our sages never refer to world history as world history, but rather to Hagoyim u'Milchomeseihem, the nations and their wars. This is world history. If that's the case, if peace is so wonderful, why is it so elusive? Why is it so difficult to attain? Sages teach us something which is very deep. Very deep. That shalom is not merely what we think it is. But it goes much further than that. The Gemara brings in the Sechta Shabbos that one is not allowed to greet his fellow man with the word shalom in the Beis HaMerchatz in a bathhouse, because the word shalom is the name of the Almighty, and we are not allowed to mention the name of the Almighty in an unclean place. Now this is something very unique, because shalom is an attribute. The Almighty has many attributes. There's chesed, there's stoko, rachamim, compassion, mishpot, judgment. Yet we do not find that you cannot mention those words in a bathhouse. So why is it only shalom? From here the rabbis teach, and amongst them the great rabbi of Prague, the Maral, that we see from here that shalom is not an attribute of the Almighty. It is not merely a practice of the Almighty. But we see that it is his very essence. Hashem Meir Ala Etzem, name identifies the being. And this is the essence of the Almighty. Now what is meant by this? What is meant by this is there the creation and the Almighty are totally opposite of each other. They are an antithesis, one to the other. The entire creation is composed of multitudes and multitudes of units, which in turn are composed of multitudes and multitudes of segments, of particles, of fragments, and all, everything in the creation, they are not complete or independent. For example, the earth has been inhabited by billions of people, enormous multitudes, by billions upon billions of animals, domesticated beasts, wildlife, bird life, billions of life in the sea, of insects, of trees, of plants, of vegetation. Enormous multitudes. And then also what the eye does not see. We have germs, bacteria, virus, neutrons, atoms, cells, whatever. And then there are the celestial bodies. There's the great lights, the sun, the moon, the stars, the galaxies. These are beyond counting. Lo yisofer. And this is what creation is made of. Each and every one of them is lacking something. They are all, they are not independent by themselves. They need air, they need sustenance, they need warmth. So each one in its own right is incomplete. And even more than that, not only are they incomplete, in most cases there is conflict between them. Each one wants to go into the territory of the other. Man wants the territory of other men. The same with animals, the same with plants, the same with germs. They actually feed on each other. And even more so, if we examine the very elements and forces which the Almighty used to create nature with, and that our sages tell us is the offer, the earth, water, fire, and air. These are forces which are conflicting forces, and each one wants to destroy the other. Water destroys fire, and fire destroys water. Where there is earth, there can be no air. And where there is air, there is no earth. So what do we see? We see a creation that at its very essence is a world of division and conflict. This is its essence. And this is why the sages said, Izaru mi'od mi'od, b'nedifas hasholom, that one has to pursue peace in this world. The Medrash in Vayikra Rabba Perek Tes states as follows: Kol ha-mitzvos ki ksiv, ki tireh, ki sifka, ki yikore. By all mitzvahs, it states, if you happen to come upon a situation in which a mitzvah can be performed, for example, you're walking along and you see a lost article, or you're walking along and you see a nest of birds, perform that mitzvah if it comes to your hand. But by shalom, by peace, it states, Bake shalom v'rafehu, pursue peace, bimkeimcha, in your place, and run after it in other places. In other words, mitzvahs can come your way. Peace will not come your way. If you want peace, you have to pursue peace. You have to run after it. It will not come to you. Because the world, the creation in its very essence, is a creation of division. Now this is all from the perspective of the world. Let's take now from the perspective of the Almighty, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it states, He is Echad V'Leishnayim. He is one and not two. This means He is all-encompassing and He lacks nothing. The Rambam writes that if the whole world would disappear, the Almighty would still be here. If the Almighty would disappear, then nothing would be here. Because everything is dependent on the Almighty, and He is dependent on nothing. He is all-encompassing and He lacks nothing. He is one and not two. So we see that the Almighty is just the opposite of the world. There is no multitudes by Him, and there is nothing that is lacking by Him, where He has to come unto others. And there is no conflict by Him, because an entity can't have conflict with itself. In other words, what we are saying is that the Almighty is the essence of peace, of shalom. where there is no conflict and there can be no conflict. Not only is he the essence of peace, all-encompassing, and no other creation besides him, and therefore there can be no conflict, but he is the single unifying force in all of creation. He brings the creation together into one. This is what the Chazal, what the sages mean when they say, Shmei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shalom. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is Shalom. Not that this is an attribute. Not that this is a custom of his or a practice of his. But he is the essence of peace. While the world is the essence of division. And he brings the oneness to the world. This is why we find that our sages consistently relate peace to Torah and to those who have studied the Torah. For example, it states, the Rambam brings at the end of Hilchos Chanukah, Kol HaTorah Kula Nitno La'aseh Shalom Ba'olam. The whole Torah was given for the purpose of bringing peace and harmony to the world. As it states, Rochecho Darchei Noam V'chol Nesivoseho Shalom. Its ways are ways of pleasantness, and all of its paths are peace. Or we say, Shalom Rav La'avei Soresecho. To those who love the Torah, they will have peace. Kol Benayich Limudi Hashem V'rav Shalom Banoich. Those who study Torah will have peace. Talmidei Chachomim Marbim Torah Ba'elam. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to unite the world, to bring this world together. And whoever brings more Torah into the world is bringing more unity and shalom into the world. And whoever brings Torah into the world is bonding the universe with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bonding a universe of untold multitudes with a single source. But there's a further dimension also. In Masechet Ovis it states, Marbet Stoka, Marbet Shalom. If you increase your charity, you will increase peace in the world. And the question is asked, charity is a wonderful quality. But why will that increase peace in the world? And on this, the Maharal says something exceedingly deep. If everyone would stay within his own territory, his own boundary, there would be no territorial wars. And everyone would not take from someone else, but use only for himself. In other words, I will not touch what is yours. You do not touch what is mine. You might not have conflict. There would be good judgment in the world. But you will not have peace and harmony. Why? Because you will have fragmentation in the world. Because everyone is by themselves. I'll give you an example. We have the musical scale. If you take two notes that do not harmonize, and you play them together, you will have conflict. They will give out an awful sour noise, and there will be a conflict. If you separate them, no longer will there be a conflict, but you will not have a symphony. You will not have a beautiful song. To take the scale of notes and make a master symphony from it, you will need a master musician. He is making peace and harmony from all of the musical notes, to take the multitudes of the world, all of the units in the world, and all of the fragments in the world, and all of the segments in the world. One thing is to avoid and to terminate the conflict between them. But you will still not have a creation. You might have a scale of individual notes, but you will not have a symphony. To create a symphony from this, you'll need a master musician that can blend it all together into a perfect symphony. And this is what is meant by Marbet Stoko, Marbet Sholom. When the creations give to each other, they are bonding themselves together where the entire world becomes one unit. Because I'll say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the angel Michael and he said, you will be in charge of water. He took the angel Gabriel and he said, you will be in charge of fire. Now, there's conflict. So he had to keep them apart. But that wasn't enough. Keeping them apart would not be a world. The world was made by bringing them together into a perfection. And that's what the Chazal tell us. Kol hanivroin lovin ze mizeh. We see by nature that it doesn't exist independently, but everything borrows from the other one. Even the day and the night. At the end of the day, the daylight borrows a little more time from the nighttime. And at the end of the nighttime borrows a little more time from the daytime. At your dusk and your twilight, to show the blending and the coming together of the creation. And this is what is meant by Marbet Stoko, Marbet Sholom, that when everyone not only keeps what to himself, but he gives from himself to others, then there is Sholom. This is a greater dimension in Sholom. Now, what we've said till now are mere words. And this is a subject which cannot be treated with mere words. When we say that there are multitudes and multitudes in the world, we have to be able to digest that a bit. And when we say there's a master musician that makes Sholom, that brings the world together, we have to digest that a bit also. So let me quote. The first quote I would like to read is as follows. There are billions and billions of suns, for every star in the sky is actually a sun. Thousands of times bigger than the earth. Each star is thousands or even millions of times bigger than the earth, yet so far away that it appears to be a mere point of light. In our galaxy alone, astronomers have counted over 100 billion stars. Each star thousands or millions of times larger than our planet. That's in our galaxy. Modern telescopes can photograph hundreds of billions of galaxies, each one containing hundreds of billions of stars. This is a quote from a book called Encounters by the late Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, who besides being an outstanding Talmud Chacham was also a very outstanding physicist. Now let's just digest for 1 minute what he's saying. He's saying there's the planet Earth. And then you have stars. And then you have galaxies. Now we all know how large the Earth is. How large is a star? It could be 1,000 or 1,000,000 times bigger than the Earth. How many stars are there in our galaxy? In our galaxy, there's over 100 billion stars, each star 1,000 times or 1,000,000 times larger than the Earth. How many galaxies are there? Modern telescopes have photographed hundreds of billions of galaxies. And each one is containing hundreds of billions of stars, and each star is 1,000,000,000 times larger than the Earth. The Chazal would always refer, and the Torah would refer, of lo yisofer, you cannot count. People used to say, what do you mean you can't count the stars? He writes that the numbers become staggering and beyond comprehension of the human being. The Chazal would point out in the Torah that the Torah would make comparisons between the stars of the heavens and the sands of the sea. How many kernels of sands are there in the sea? Billions, billions, trillions. But there couldn't be that many stars because there's not enough space for them. Yet, if the Earth is so big, and one star is 1,000,000,000 times larger than the Earth, and there are 100,000,000,000 stars in one galaxy, all of that size, and there are hundreds of billions of galaxies in the sky, how large is the sky? He writes that the area we're speaking about, again, is staggering, beyond the comprehension of the human mind. It is similar to the grains of the sands of the sea. What is the precision of all of this? It states, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eisei Shalom Bimreimav. He makes peace up there. What does it mean he makes peace up there? The sages say, first he has to make peace, there shouldn't be conflict. The Gemara told us many, many thousands of years ago that if one star would be off course, a microsecond would destroy the whole creation. The perfection of timing is so great that scientists can predict hundreds of years in advance exactly at what point will a particular star or comet be there to the second. This is what is meant, Oseh Shalom Bimreimov, where he takes multitudes upon multitudes about multitudes, Lei Sofer, beyond the comprehension of counting, and he meshes them all together to work in harmony and in peace. We say, Eisei Shalom Bimreimav, Hu Yaseh Shalom Aleinu, he should do that with us. Now this is what the celestial beings. We have another Chazal. Chazal tell us that how great are the heavens, the human being was a greater creation. Now how can that be? How could the human being be a greater creation than the heavens when what we have just explained about the heavens? So let me quote further from a book called Time of Our Lives, published in Great Britain just this year, just past year, 1999, Science of Human Aging, by Professor Tom Kirkwood. He's Britain's first professor of biological gerontology at the University of Manchester. He studied at Cambridge and Oxford. He did research for the National Institute of Biological Standards and Control, National Institution for Medical Research. He's published more than 160 scientific papers on a wide range of subjects connected to human aging, and is worldly renowned. He's on the editorial boards of 8 international academic journals in the life sciences and in medicine. Currently, he's the president of the British Society of Research into Aging. He's the chairman of the Research Advisory Council of the Medical Charity Research into Aging. So he's a man that has done some studying on this subject. He writes as follows. The adult human being contains an average around 100,000 billion cells. The adult human being is made up of 100,000 billion cells. He says, in case you have a hard time to understand what that is, well, that you write a 1 and it's followed by 14 zeros. That's A. B, every one of these 100,000 billion cells, which is in every human being, has a way of communicating with every other cell in that human being. There is a sophisticated communication system which scientists have not yet found or understand, but they know it's there. Then, he says, if you take the cells from a fetus, now cells constantly reproduce, they divide and reproduce, they die out and they produce others. So the cells of a fetus can typically manage around 50 or 60 cumulative population doublings. So he says it's worth reflecting on these numbers, what they mean. Because that means that during a lifetime of a person, his cells will produce between 1 million billion and 1 billion billion cells from one cell. One cell will produce 1 million billion to 1 billion billion cells. But, he says, it doesn't end there, because we don't start with one cell. We start with a... what was the amount we mentioned? We start with 100,000 billion cells. So that means that if no cells would die out, how many cells does the human being produce during a lifetime? This means that if all cells were kept, there would eventually be between 1,000 billion billion and 1 million billion billion cells in the person's cell population. The final mass of cells from the original embryo culture would be between 10 million and 100 million times bigger than you or me. From here we have an insight in what the sages are saying, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he created the whole world, but the greatest creation and the most complex of the creations was man, even greater than the celestial beings. And we'll go one step further. I'll quote from an old book. This is a report that the Reader's Digest once wrote, a special report, but this goes back 25 years ago. Today, scientists have found out much more. And this is on the brain. The brain can state that the wonders of the entire universe pale into insignificance compared to the brain of the human being. He weighs only 3 pounds, but no computer exists that can duplicate his myriad functions. His component parts are staggering in number, some 30,000 million neurons and 5 to 10 times that number of glial cells. And all of this is in a 3-pound substance. Even when a person sleeps, the brain continues to handle traffic that would swamp all of the world's telephone exchanges. The makeup of the brain is a baffling intertwining of roots multiplied by millions. Each of the brain's 30,000 million nerve cells or neurons connects with each other sometimes as many as 60,000 times. This is its communication system. Signals are passed back and forth at speeds up to 225 miles per hour. And after each signal passes, it takes the filament about 2,000th of a second to chemically recharge itself. Now, with all of this traffic, at no point does any of the neurons ever touch each other. There are no traffic accidents. And signals are passed spark gap fashion. At each firing, one nerve chemically communicates with another. So this is the creation. This is its multitudes. This is how it's made of units, which are made of segments, cells that cannot even be counted. And from all of this, there is one unifying force that puts it all together, and this is the Echod Veleishnayim, the one who is one and not two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is why he is called the Odon HaSholom, the God of peace and harmony. This gives us a little insight in what two of the greatest scientists of the last thousands of years said. One was Sir Isaac Newton. When they said to him that you have uncovered the mysteries of the universe, he said no. He says, I'm like a little boy that's playing on the beach of the ocean, and once in a while I see a pretty shell and I pick it up and I save it. That's how much of the mystery of the oceans I have uncovered. And the others, Professor Albert Einstein, after he developed his theory of relativity, they said to him, now we understand the universe. He said, no. He said, before, we were observing the universe from the window of a house. Now we are observing the universe from the roof of the house. That's the difference. They realized what's out there. When we were little boys and we used to hear about the idol worshippers, Abraham's father used to make idols. They would worship these idols because they said the idols created the world. How childish this was. But yet we have the same thing today in the evolutionists. But the evolutionists can say that this world with its billions and billions of celestial beings and billions of cells in the human being created itself and governs itself. Now this is in regards to Sholom in general. In regards to Sholom Bayis, there we must come even to a greater dimension of Sholom. For three reasons. Firstly, the oneness that the Almighty created through male and female has no equal in the creation. We find that there's a lunchman, two people coming from the same city, from the same land. There's those who belong to the same community. There's even blood relations. But the Gemara tells us when it comes to man and his wife, who are not blood relations, they are referred to ishtei kegufay or balki ishtei. They are one of the same. And this has legal ramifications. And the Vilna Gaon asked the question. According to an opinion in the Gemara, the Almighty, when he created male and female, he created them in one body. And then he separated them. He asked, if the ultimate was to be separated, so why didn't he create them as two individuals? And if they were supposed to remain together, that's why he created them as one, so why did he separate them? So he answers as follows. He wanted them to be two separate individuals, because Ezek and Egdai, they have to help each other. Tova shnai mina echod, two are better than one. But at the same time, he wanted them to be one. And in order that they could be one, he made their sheirish, their source, one. And then he divided them. So, their unity is greater than anything else. So it's a greater dimension of shalom. A second reason. They are one together, and they were divided. To divide a complete and perfect entity, you must get differences and many times opposites. If you take something which is a whole and is perfect, like the Almighty created male and female together, and you divide it in half, you cannot have in one half what you have in the other. Because then when it was together, you would have duplication. So therefore, what's in one half is not in the other, and what's in the other half is not in the first one. This creates differences, and many times opposites. And therefore, it calls for even a greater dimension of shalom to make a unit out of it. And then there are the long-term ramifications. Why shalom bayis is so important? Because, after all, where did the world come from? The world came from Adam and Chava, from man and woman. The cornerstone of the world, the cornerstone of society, is the home. If there is peace in the home, this brings peace in society. If there is division in the home, this will bring division in society for generations. Because of these reasons, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw in his wisdom this, he gave man and woman a special bracha. He took his name, and one letter of his name, the Yud, he put in Ish, and the other letter of his name, he put in Isha, the Hay, in order that his name, his essence, which is the unifying force of peace, would be right in both of them to bring them together. This is why we find, for example, where it states, where they count in the Torah, in Parshas Pinchas, all of the tribes. So it states, B'nei Ruvein Chanoch Mishpachas HaChanochi Lefalu Mishpachas HaFalui, that a hay and a yud was added in each one. He made a special effort to unify them more than in anything else in the rest of the world, where he actually took his name and wrote his name in them. And therefore, he placed his Shekhinah, he himself, amongst them to make their union perfect. Now, if the sages said that mitzvahs will come your way, but peace will not come your way, you are going to have to pursue peace, then how much more so does one have to do this in his own home, and to make sure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, his Shekhinah, is in your own home. And therefore the sages teach us that because we are dealing here with a division which is so close and so perfect, we must be very, very careful even on something that seemed to be very small and is insignificant. Because when you're dealing with to unify something which does not require such perfection, you have a great margin. But when we're dealing with the perfection of the unity between a man and his wife, that dimension requires a great level of shalom. And this the Torah brings out when Sarah was told that she was to give birth to Yitzchak, Vatitzchak Sarah bekirba va'omra. Sarah laughed and she said, I am so old. How can I give birth? And my husband is so old. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham and said, why is she laughing? And she said, Omnom eled vaniso kanti, she said, I am too old to give birth. And he didn't repeat over to Abraham that she said he was too old. And the sages learn from here how careful one must be when it comes to the relations between man and his wife. And the sages learn from here that one is allowed, for the sake of peace, not allowed but obligated, even to say a lie, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. But we can ask, what was the big deal? Abraham was 99 years old then. And it was considered from the greatest miracles when he gave birth to Yitzchak. So what was the big deal that she said that her husband is too old to give birth? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to lie and say that she only said it about herself and not about you? So from here we see that the perfection of a unity between husband and wife has to reach such levels where the most insignificant and slightest irritation or abrasiveness is already a flaw. Again, if you make pop music, you can have a lot of flaws. If you're a Beethoven, the slightest irritation is going to spoil it. To the contrary, the angels asked Abraham, where is Sarah? And he answered, she's in the tent. And the sages said, the angels knew that, but they wanted to emphasize to Abraham how modest she is, in order to endear her even more. One must go out of their way to endear and to emphasize unity than rather to the contrary. And further we see that not only does the Shalom Bayis take emphasis over the truth, but the sages tell us even Shalom takes emphasis even over a positive commandment. For example, it states, this is brought in Shulchan Aruch and Ebenezer, that if a man was married and he produced children during his lifetime, he fulfilled the mitzvah, a son and a daughter, and then heaven forbid his wife died and now he's looking to remarry, it's a mitzvah for him to take a woman that can bear more children, because it states that one must try to bring as many children as reasonable into this world. What happens if he has the type of children that he knows that if he will have more children from his second wife, there will be conflict, they will not get along? So it states then he's allowed to take a woman that's past the childbearing age, even though he's transgressing this mitzvah, B'divrei Kabbalah, which comes from the Tanakh. And the source of this is brought. It states that when a woman's husband dies and there are no children, it's a mitzvah for the brother-in-law to marry her. If he doesn't want to marry her, then he can give her a writ of a divorce, which is known as a chalitza. So it says that he comes up to the Zikne Irai, to the elders of the city, with Dibru Elov, and they speak to him. And then he says, I do not want to take her, and he gives her this writ of divorce. And the sages ask, what does it mean they speak to him? What do they talk to him about? And it says they're obligated to give him a good etzah, a good counsel. If he is young and she is old, or she is young and he is old, they tell him, Klach etzel kemeischa, don't marry her. Take someone your own age. Loma tachnis ketota l'seif beisecho. Why should you bring quarrels into your house? And they advise him to transgress the mitzvah of taking the brother-in-law's wife, the mitzvah of yibum, because chalitza b'malkam yibum la mitzvihi. And from here we learn that shalom takes precedence even over a positive commandment in the Torah. Another example. It states that if it's Hanukkah and you have enough money to buy a Shabbos candle, a Shabbos Hanukkah, a Shabbos candle, or a Hanukkah candle, or wine for Kiddush, what takes the priority? Wine for Kiddush is very important. And the Hanukkah candle is Pesumei Niso. That's to sanctify the Almighty's name publicly from the greatest mitzvahs, to show of the great miracles he made. Yet the Gemara says the Shabbos candle comes first, because Shalom Bayis Adifa. Shalom must always come first, and the Shabbos candle represents Shalom. And therefore, in regards to Shalom in general, or in regards to Shalom in particular in a man's household, the sages constantly commanded us, constantly heeded us, and cautioned us to pursue all of the qualities that bring peace, and to distance ourselves from all of the qualities that bring piru, division, and machlekes. Hevi midosei kimidis shel Aaron haKohen. We should make ourselves disciples of Aaron. Ohev shalom, he loved peace and he pursued peace. He loved the people and he brought them close to Torah. Shammai said, mekables kol odom v'sev upon him yofes. Be nice to every person. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai said, in all of my life, nobody greeted me before I greeted them. Afilo akam shebeshuk, even a non-Jew in the marketplace. Rabbi Lezer HaGodol said to his disciples when they asked him, teach us how we can merit the world to come. He said, Hevi zoher bikfeid chavercho. Be careful to honor your fellow man, and you will have the world to come. And the sages said that when it comes to a man's household and his wife, you shall love your wife as much as yourself, and you should honor her even more than yourself. And this was the ways, these were the ways of the great Torah sages and giants of Lithuania. Well, they did everything possible to keep the people together rather than fragmentating them, rather than dividing them. And I would like to conclude with a story from the great Chofetz Chaim, Zichreinu Levracha, where he was traveling and he stayed over in a village in an inn. And he came down to supper. And there, sitting not far from him, was another Jew, but someone of a very, you would say in Yiddish, a prosti yid, a very, very coarse Jewish individual. The way he was dressed, and his mannerisms, and the way he spoke, and the way he was groomed. And the owner of the inn, it was his daughter that was helping to serve the tables. And this man was very, 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 very impolite and coarse with her. And he was making her to get this and telling her to hurry up, and he was insulting her and so forth. And this was getting the Chofetz Chaim very, very upset. So he called over the innkeeper and he asked him, who is that man? And he said, he's Nebuch, a Yid, a Jew, but when he was a young boy, they took him into the Tsar's army. And when they took you into the Tsar's army, it was for 20 or 25 years. This was one reason why so many Jews left that area of the world and came to the Western countries. Chofetz Chaim said, ask him to come over, I want to speak to him. And the innkeeper said, no, I can't let you talk to him. He's liable to shout at you, he can curse you, he can swear. No. The Chofetz Chaim insisted. So he told the man that the rabbi would like to speak to you. And the man said, the rabbi wants to speak to me. Yes, so he came over. So the Chofetz Chaim tells him, he says, you know, I have great admiration for you. He says, you have admiration for me? He says, yes. He says, why? He says, because I understand that when you were a young boy, you were taken into the Tsar's army, and you were there for about 20 years, amongst all of the goyim, and all types of ruffians and so forth. And I see you still consider yourself a Jew. You still identify yourself as a Jew. I don't know, the Chofetz Chaim said, if I would be capable of that. I was taken away from my parents as a young boy for so many years and brought up in an army of goyim, of non-Jews. I don't know if I would still be able to consider myself a Jew. And therefore I have great admiration for you. The man was overwhelmed. Nobody ever spoke to him like this before, especially a rabbi. And during the course of time, became very close to the Chofetz Chaim, and he became a Baal Tshuva, and a person who was Shem Eteru Mitzvahs. This was the approach. The Chofetz Chaim had the approach not to create division, but to create shalom, and to use every possible method at hand. And this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the world is a multitude of segments of cells of celestial beings, all in conflict with each other. And therefore the universe is prone to machlekes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, is the essence of oneness. He brings everything together. And whoever pursues this path, he brings Shekhinah into the world. He becomes a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226 Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.